This is part two of a two-part podcast, and we'll just get right back into it.
Go ahead, Bibimbap.
Okay, so I just had, I wanted to touch on a couple points, and I actually had a few questions for you guys and your thoughts. One thing that I find interesting is this is like the closest election in terms of like the raw data that I've ever seen or even read about historically. Like we're looking at like literally 50-50 chance for either side right now. And it's funny because the betting markets all have Trump as the favorite, but that like the data that I look at, I do this for a living, and the data I look at, it's literally a dead even coin flip. What do you guys think? Why do you guys think that is? Why do you guys think that there's, do you think, so I guess what I'm referring to is back when Obama faced Romney, I think it was like, what is it, 16 years ago or so? There was a site called InTrade. The second one. There was a site called InTrade that CNN was constantly reporting. Like it was a betting market where CNN was constantly reporting, and they were saying, oh, Romney's 50-50 with Obama right now, when in fact the odds were Obama was like a 95% probability to win that election, even though like the betting market said otherwise. This time I'm seeing something completely different with Trump. They're saying that Trump's a 2-to-1 favorite against Kamala. I don't see that at all.
The betting markets.
Yeah, because betting markets, in general, I will say this.
But I thought they were close. I thought that gap completely reversed over the last day or two.
Yeah, they've reversed the last day or two, but still, like, there's no reason for Trump to be ahead in anything right now. Which I find curious, too, because gut instinct for me, right? Like, by intuition, just as an observer, Kamala's been an awful candidate in terms of just like the way she's running her election. Also, Trump has survived basically two assassination attempts. Intuition tells me like he should just be running away with it right now.
Yeah,
but for some reason, he's not. And in some polls, it looks like Kamala's the favorite. I don't believe those polls, but I like. What do you guys make out of that?
Like, why is it so even?
Yeah, what? Like,
didn't Nate,
why
didn't
are
Nate
why are so
out?
Many people like clinging on to the Democratic Party at this point? Like, do you think it's two things? One thing I think is for sure is like I don't actually think that anyone that votes Democrat cares about like the war in Israel or Palestine. I think like 90% or almost all of them are just virtual signaling when they. Like pretend to care. And secondly, I'm not sure, do you guys honestly think that this fear mongering about, you know, Roe v. Wade and like all these like civil liberties that are going to be gone do you believe that people actually believe these things? Or
I'm sure some do. I think I think they genuinely fear that the orcs are going to take away their rights. You know, but do I believe that the Democrats are
like
sincere about it?
Like four white people, basically, of America.
Like, why is it so close?
Yeah.
Well, didn't Nate Silver come out and say all the pollsters are fucking bullshit because they're hurting or whatever? And like HERDING hurting. And he's saying that the polls are just completely awful and can't be trusted. And basically,
polls should never be trusted at face value. Like, this is what I've learned in basically almost two decades of studying these things. They should never be trusted. But the one thing that is true in every election about these polls is they have biases that are consistent throughout the elections. So if you have a poll that constantly polls like in favor of Democrats or constantly polls in favor of Republicans, what you can actually do is parse through that data and say, okay, well, this poll is generally like 5 points in favor of Republicans, you can actually like adjust the data and sort of parse through all those things and come up with something that's actually reasonable. I've been using that to predict these elections down to the state level for like 16 years or whatever, since Obama, Romney or whatever. And in my opinion, and I think I would trust my opinion for significant sums of money, it's dead even right now. Like, I,
you think it's legitimately dead even?
Yeah, like I just posted something recently. Like, I haven't been doing a lot of the data this time because I just don't really have a lot of liquidity to bet on this election. But right now, it's 50.4% Trump and 49.2% Kamala. This is like, and 0.4% tie. This is like, this is like closer than any like coin flip you would see in poker or like anything. Like, this is like legitimately like, I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen anything historical.
Anomalously like even.
Do you think they've been fudging with the numbers?
Okay, this is what I'll say about polling.
You know, because they've been wrong so much to preserve their credibility. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. This is what I'll say about polls. All polls are bad. There isn't a single poll out there that doesn't have some sort of bias or sort of inconsistency with the way. So they're all inaccurate. But like I said before, what I tried to explain before, these biases, it's kind of like a, these biases are consistent.
Yeah, I understand. Mm.
Yeah. So when you sort of take every poll and then sort of like parse the data that way, it actually becomes, this is just a bias I have towards the data, but I actually think it actually becomes remarkably accurate in terms of like, I mean, I had Trump winning the last election. I had Trump winning the primary. I had, do you know what I mean? Like, I had Georgia turning blue last election. I had, so like, these things, in my opinion, are very predictable. Right now, though, what I'm seeing is like, this is, and another thing that's interesting is like, you're talking about swing states, right? I really think, and I everyone's been repeating this, there's only one swing state this election. It's Pennsylvania. No other state matters. So it's like a bunch of Eagles fans deciding the future of the elections right now. It's insane. Like, even Wisconsin, Michigan, all these other states that people are talking about are important, they're not.
Why aren't they? Why aren't they? Because you don't think that they're actually swing states, or they just don't?
They're swing states in the sense that they're toss-ups. Like, either side could win. They're not swing states because they don't have enough electoral college votes to actually swing the vote.
Just in terms of electoral college numbers.
Yeah, it's like if whoever wins Pennsylvania has like a much easier path, right? Basically,
it's okay. So right now, it's like 90% of outcomes where Kamala wins the election, she wins Pennsylvania, and 88% of the outcomes where Trump wins the election, she wins. So there's still like a 10% sort of possibility that either side loses Pennsylvania and wins, but 90% correlated to a Pennsylvania win right now. Oh. So like, their votes are worth way more than any, like even Nevada, which is actually a closer race in my opinion in terms of who's going to win. Like, I think Trump is probably going to win Pennsylvania.
You don't think this came, wasn't this the case in Bush v. Gore? Like,
I was a little bit before my time, but Bush, I sound like a conspiracy. I really think Gore won that election, and like that election was actually stolen.
Yeah.
I don't even think that's like a conspiracy theory.
No, that's not a conspiracy. Yeah.
But that election, I think it did come down to Florida, though.
It came down to Broward County.
Yeah, or something like that. See, it changes every election. It's just interesting. Like, this is like the broken electoral college. Like, it's even worse than other places like Canada that have employ a similar system.
I thought that you were going to go somewhere with this, which is like, is there a reason for it to be this?
This is what I'm trying to ask you guys, because you guys like understand the American public better than I do. I'm like kind of an observer looking in, but I have no, everything in my gut tells me that Trump should just run away. The man survived two assassination attempts, Kamala to me is worse PR nightmare than Hillary was, and somehow she's still hanging. I mean, she's. She has as good a chance as Trump does, and I don't understand
it. Yeah, I don't understand it either. Yeah,
like to me, it's like, and this is why I'm trying to ignore my personal bias.
You're basically saying like it's as if we flipped a coin and it landed on its side. Like, how did it get like this?
Yeah.
And another thing is, I really, because I didn't look at the data when it came to the primaries, but this is the, I think it was the first primary that had ever been won by anyone during like economic downturn or say, or some sort of economic metric. But that was the first time an incumbent party had won a primary with like some sort of economic downturn. I was shocked, to be honest. And the Democrats ran away with the primaries. So it's like,
they didn't have a primary.
I'm not trying to, no, sorry, not the primary, the midterm, sorry.
Oh, the midterm.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you mean yeah, like the when midterm. The red waves didn't pan out or whatever?
Yeah. I mean, to me, that's why I basically ignore my intuition when it comes to this shit, because obviously I don't know what I'm talking about when it comes to just like feeling it out. Because the data always says something different, but this one to me, I mean, it goes back to what you guys were talking about. Like, there is some sort of spiritual or cultural sort of people, and I really do think, and it's ironic that everyone accuses these MAGA people of being cultists. I really, really think that the Democrats are behaving way more like
absolutely. Cultists.
Way more what?
Like, cultists.
Oh, cultists, yeah.
They're cultists on the Democrat side.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, when Trump supported vaccines, for instance, the MAGA people actually went against him. They were booing him at his own rallies. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? These people, I'm not saying that they're logical or they aren't wrong, but I do think that they have sort of principles that they stand by and will challenge their own leaders when it comes down to it, right?
They're
right
the bigger tent right now. They're the broader tent. And
it's just insane. Yeah.
I could be completely naive here, but I genuinely believe that Trump he actually likes his base, whereas the Democrats like just want to whip them into shape. They don't give a shit about them. They just like just comply. I think he genuinely feels connected to his base and feels some sense of responsibility towards them. And
the second I have three questions, but the second point I wanted to ask, it was just kind of about what Carl talked about, the soft coup of the, where do the Republicans go from here if Trump loses, right? Like I'm looking at the Republican Party right now, and so Cheney, George W., everyone is defected to Team Blue, it seems like, right? Like all these sort of like neoconservative, like
rhino
types. Yeah. So what is it? Is it like Tom Cotton and shit like that now? If Trump's gone, like, is it like complete psychopaths?
You know, it's a good question. But who, right? Tom Cotton.
I think that's a tactical question that stymied Trump's first term. He didn't have anyone to hire, so he hired a collection of fucking neocons. And
This time, no.
But this time, I do think. I think like J.D. Vance, I presume, will become a very powerful vice president, and his cabinet will, especially like his foreign policy cabinet, will be more or less subservient to Vance. I think he's going to let Vance run point on a lot of foreign policy stuff. That's my
But what if he loses? Bibimbap's question.
So if the Republicans lose?
Yeah. Well, you know, where?
That's what I mean. It's like, what happens to the party? Are we going to see? It's like, to me, this is what it looks like to me. Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I think we'll continue in some form.
They will continue, but I just see them never winning an election again.
Do
you know what I mean?
Why? I mean, I think that there's going to be a huge amount of shit that goes down in the next 4 years, whoever wins, it doesn't matter. Like, the U.S. is in a particular situation right now, and it doesn't matter who's the president. And it doesn't matter who controls the Senate.
Point about they're never winning another election, they make that point. The Republicans, the MAGA people.
Why? Because of,
they're worried about all this immigration thing that it's being used to pad up.
Yeah, but this is the same. But this is the same demographic fatalism that the Democrats thought would carry them forever. That
out those voters are going for the Republicans.
Yeah, exactly. I think the Republicans. I guess what I'm saying is, I think there's forces deeper than partisan politics, that I do think that there is a class insurgency going on. I don't think it's going to culminate tomorrow. I think tomorrow has been hyped as this really important event, and I think in the longer arc of what's actually happening in America, it's going to be a relatively minor event when all is said and done. But I think the continued immiseration of American people will continue, regardless of whether it's Kamala or Trump. And that's going to, I don't know what that means for the Republican Party, and I don't really care. I just think that the politics in 4 years' time is going to look so different than today, because it's just going to get fucking worse, isn't it? I mean, you really, let me ask you this question, dude. Do you think things are going to get better in the next 4 years? Like, are Americans going to somehow turn this ship around and inequality is going to come down and we're going to have manufacturing jobs all over the place and we're going to come together as a country? I don't believe that.
So when I'm looking at the two candidates, I have tons of people accuse me of being a Trump supporter. I'm not. I don't really have a preference to either candidate. But one thing I do think that separates the two candidates, and maybe I'm completely naive, and this actually relates to my third point, is I do think outside of Israel and Palestine, Trump is probably a little bit more committed to sort of non-intervention.
I think so too.
I do think, and this might even sound more naive, I do think the war in Ukraine kind of hinges on, well, this is kind of like the forgotten war right now because everyone's focusing on Israel Palestine. But I do think if Trump gets elected, I think that war ends pretty quickly. And I do think that if Kamala gets elected, no, it doesn't. They're going to continue to siphon through their like arms Ponzi, arms manufacturing Ponzi, or whatever. I can't even figure out what they're doing right now in Ukraine. The only explanation to me is that they're just making their arms manufacturers richer. I refuse to believe anyone thinks Ukraine has a chance. I mean, they don't, and no one thinks they do.
The better information you have, the less you're going to believe that too, right? Like, it's clear.
There's no chance, but I do think, like, Trump is more committed. And then another interesting thing, and I think Carl and John would be better understanding of the sort of Asian situation now, is, like, we have this situation in Korea with this, like, insane, this Yoon guy who seems really committed to just selling the entire, I mean, the one thing about South Korea, and maybe this is just like, I do think like a lot of the administrations, although they were pro-US, were way less likely in the past to like completely write off China as a potential viable trade partner, like versus like a country like Japan, for instance. But now it's like Yoon is kind of taking us on the suicide mission into just completely going all in with the US. And the way I see things, I don't think it's going to happen as soon as a lot of other people do, but I don't see any future where China doesn't overtake the US in several key industries, right? Like the microchip stuff, you can see it happening already.
Yeah.
Everything, right? Yeah. And I think South Korea actually was like pretty well positioned to sort of play both sides and benefit from both sides.
Yep.
But now it's like, now we're screwed.
It's giving up that advantage.
Yeah, because they honestly, South Korea was actually a little bit different than even Taiwan and Japan in this instance, where like they had well positioned themselves in terms of being sort of this neutral, like even Moon, right? I wasn't a big Moon fan, but he never wanted to write off China the way Japan and like, I mean, at least in terms of signaling. But now this Yoon guy is like even worse than like, do you know what I mean? Like he just wants to go all in on this sort of sinking ship. And my question is a lot of people have been saying this in a lot of my Korean political sort of spheres, is like, if Lee Jae-myung, who's the guy, I don't know if you've heard of Lee Jae-myung, but he's basically like Korea's Trump, which is funny because he's on the left and not the right. But he's the guy that everyone hates for no like particular reason. Like, if you want to talk about like Trump derangement syndrome, It's the exact same thing about Yoon's opponent in the last election. Yoon was basically elected not because anyone liked Yoon. No one liked Yoon in this country. No one liked Yoon before the election. He was elected because everyone had this like massive boner for Lee Jae-myung, because he has these clips of him yelling at people. Sort of, he's not a very nice guy in terms of the way he speaks, right? But he was very, his policy was very, we're going to do what benefits Korea. We're not going to take sides between this, like, America-China sort of...
like a Duterte kind of...
Yeah.
No, yeah. Well, obviously,
I know. He's liberal, though. Yeah. Like, yeah.
So it's really interesting, what I mean, like, you know...
Because Malaysia and other Southeast Asian countries just seem to be stepping into that breach where
So this is...
So my question for you guys is, if Trump wins, because Trump, I think as a person, thing is, I don't have faith in him being able to overcome the political forces to actually make the decision, but I do think Trump as a person wants American troops out of South Korea. I truly believe that, him as a person, whether or not he has the power to make that happen.
That's a good thing. I mean, you know, we shouldn't be so too hung up, completely hung up on the cynicism about these guys not being able to do things. It does.
He's consistently said it for like 3 decades now.
I know.
And this is what's insane.
Can't do it, right?
Like, so many.
I'd rather have the candidates who could try and
are trying to gaslight me into telling me, oh no, Trump is lying. I mean, he has no reason. Listen, Trump has no incentive.
Yeah.
To be friendly,
yeah, it's not
like
some
popular,
no, in fact, it draws the ire of the deep state, right? Because it's such an unpopular position in the Beltway, right? But
yeah, even within his own base, being friendly to North Korea is not something that would make him popular. But he's the kind of guy, and I think actually the way he's dealt with North Korea is actually like one of the pristine examples of diplomacy that an American politician president can have. They start, I don't know if you guys remember, they started off threatening to nuke the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
They were like yelling, they were like at each other's throats when Trump got into office, because I mean, Trump had Bolton talking into his ear, so obviously he's going to be a rabid little dog when it comes. And then by the end of his tenure, he was the only sitting president to ever visit North Korea. And so this is actually a prime example of diplomacy, in my opinion. This is one of the, shining moments.
No.
So my question is, if we see like a Trump, Lee Jae-myung, because the Korean elections are coming up in the year after, I think.
It would really change things. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you guys think it would actually really change things for Korea in terms of like?
No, it could be a very important opening if that were to happen. If you have a coincidence on two sides, you brought up something really interesting. It's all these people who hang their entire careers around Biden, essentially Biden policy. They're kind of out to dry if Trump is in. That's another foreign policy consequence. You think of Yoon. And even Marcos in the Philippines, people who have, against the interests of their own people, you know, sort of hitched their political fortunes onto basically neocon foreign policy of the US. Even the Taiwanese, even Lai. If Trump comes in and there's a degree of ambivalence about those alliances, you know, if he comes in and he pushes through a kind of Elbridge Colby type of policy where it really is sort of America first, okay, we're going to be still, even if you're going to be focused on East Asia and containing China, but it's our interest first, then I think quite a few of these other leaders who have built themselves up around basically US neocon posture are going to find themselves, out to dry, right? I mean, Zelensky, to take an extreme example, would be a goner if Trump comes in. Yeah.
No, but it's really interesting
to you, but we can't, like, just be talking about Korea, but we should do one with you. I love how you are very quantitative. you really raise a very interesting question about
let me numbers. Carl, you're around. Do you remember I forgot who he was talking to about it. It might have been like a Bolton or something when he was when Trump was president. And he, I think this was relayed by someone that was in the room, and he basically laughed at the idea of there being a defense of Taiwan because he said, look at the map. Taiwan's like, what, 100 miles off the coast? Are you fucking insane?
Yeah.
I feel like there is
he said, yeah, we're right across there, and Taiwan is like 2 feet away or something like that. You know, it's, yeah, it's,
yeah, I feel like, I feel like the thing is, like, the idiots, like, the complaint that I have against, like, the neocons is not even ideological. It's that they don't make any sense. Like, you can't defend Taiwan. It's pretty clear. You just look at the map, and it's pretty clear you can't do it. And I feel like Trump is, like, separated enough from the neocon complex where he doesn't feel any obligation to just not speak his mind. And any normal person would look at the map and say the same thing. Like, how are we going to defend this island? It's less than 100 miles off the coast of China. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I haven't met a single Taiwanese, but I spent a lot of time in Taiwan in the past 2 years. I talked to cab drivers. I talked to college students. I talked to everyone. I haven't met a single person that thinks they would win any type of incursion with China. I haven't met a single person, even with the help of the U.S.
Yeah.
There's just no chance. And I think Taiwanese people, the difference between Taiwanese people and Ukrainian people are, like, Taiwanese people are legitimately too smart to think that they would win any type of war with China. And then everyone's like, oh, they're no, it has nothing to do with cowardice. They're looking at the situation and saying, no, we can't win this. Why would I, like, why would we even try? This is suicide.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my experience too.
I mean, I want to meet one person. I haven't met a single, I haven't even seen a single person on Twitter that isn't sort of like from America or something like that, that thinks that Taiwan should legitimately defend itself militaristically if China decides to forcefully reunify. Like, it's a complete, like, it's like less realistic than the Ukraine thing, which I already think it was 0% to begin with, right? Like,
I do think the difference with Trump is that he looks at foreign countries mainly as trading and prestige rivals rather than like military adversaries.
Yeah.
And he, like you said, I think with respect to the military presence in it, like in the security guarantee of like South Korea, he was saying like in the late 80s that we shouldn't have troops in Okinawa. He was like, this is a bad deal. Like, why? Like,
yeah, he's consistent about it. Yeah.
He was like, dude, make me understand this. So we're going to fight your fucking wars for you. And at the same time, you won't let us sell Chevrolets in Japan. How about we make a fucking trade? I think he views the security guarantee as an asset on the books of South Korea for which we should be paid.
Yeah.
And I don't.
Yeah, and no, which is what I respected about him the most. The thing is, he had this funny ass relationship with Moon where he kind of just treated him like his little dog.
Yeah.
And like he would just kind of just be like, oh, you know what I mean? Yeah. He would. And the thing is,
sycophant vassal types don't do well with Trump.
But Moon was in his own roundabout way.
Did he play both sides?
He had a pretty accurate understanding of like sovereignty on the peninsula. He treated KJU with great respect because he's the leader of a sovereign country.
Yeah.
And he treated Moon like he was one of his underlings because that's like in reality what it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But he understood that not from like some this sort of like Marxist lens that people like learn it from
Twitter. it was like instinct.
It was fiscal responsibility. It was like literally like fiscal conservatism that he learned this from, and which is why I respected him the most, because he kind of found the answer in his own roundabout way that a lot of leftists on Twitter don't understand. Like, I think a lot of leftists on Twitter, I'm sure you think this team too, like literally don't understand global finance or the way money works at all. Like, and so
They start from a lot of like big picture principles, but they don't really have
learn from like academia, right? They learn economics through academia, right?
Yeah.
And like academia, if there's one thing that's butchered or misinterpreted or misapplied to like contemporary the contemporary world, like economics might be even worse than Marxism. Like this, these are the same people that think like the CPC isn't communist or something because they employ a capitalist class or something like that. Like it's nonsense because people don't really understand, aren't able to separate theory from like applying theory to like 2024. Yeah. Like, you know, a lot of these economic theories were invented in like,
I do think you as like a professional player, let's call it that, may be just recognizing something in Trump, because I saw like an interview of Trump with like one of these, you know, bro-ish, like, you know, not right wing, but you know what I mean? Like dude, like broadcasts, you know what I mean? I forgot which one.
Yeah.
And Trump was so at home in this space, and he was explaining to them what it's like to go to a summit with people like Putin and, you know, Bin Salman and Xi. And he was like, dude, you got to understand, like, these are the sharks of all sharks. You're going to send Kamala in there? He was like, this is the highest stakes table. You got to be able to sit down at this table and hold your own. And I think what he's trying to say is like, you can sit back in the fucking Pentagon or in the State Department and talk all you want about the American world, the rules-based international order, all you want. But when it comes down to these people and Blinken and Biden, they can't sit down at the table and play because they're fucking losers. They don't, you know, they're careerists and they're not really sovereign. They're not, they don't have a stack.
They're like chess pieces. They're like little pawns. I agree with you. And the one thing I will say is this is bad. This isn't really quantitative. This is more my perception. I do think whether or not people like him, world leaders sort of respect the power that Trump wields a lot more. Like,
I think they view him as like a legible human being along their line. So they're like, wait, I can at least communicate with him.
Yeah.
And I think the frustration with like Biden's team is like, what? It's like talking to like ChatGPT, yeah, but ChatGPT, like OpenAI, has put all these like guardrails, and the second you get out of bounds, ChatGPT shuts down and is like, I can't talk about that. And it's like,
yeah,
it's like talking to a fucking they're like LLMs, you know?
I spent an hour the other day trying to get ChatGPT to say something racist to me, and it just refused. I told them I was Korean and it was okay to say certain racist things, and it still refused. So I don't know.
Like, you're talking to a Korean professional card player?
I can't game it.
Yeah.
I literally can't. So, I mean, it. And I was trying, you know, sometimes I troll my kid. I've never laid a hand on my kid, but sometimes I'll troll my kid and ask ChatGPT, like, oh, what countries am I allowed to, like, beat my children? Or, like, something like that, right? And ChatGPT refuses to give me an answer.
I think Trump might give me an answer. Like, he'll try to give me an answer.
But it's funny, though, actually, this is an odd point. They only banned, like, child beatings in Japan, like, 2 years ago or something like that. I just learned that recently through all this discourse. But, yeah, that they ended that only 2 years ago, funny enough. But the last thing I wanted to ask, the last point I wanted to make, actually, and in some ways, I almost respect, and this might be a little bit controversial, but I almost respect these sort of, because, you know, there's two types of Sinophobia I see in the U.S. right now. There's this sort of dismissive, like the liberals kind of dismiss China. They come up with these like excuses as to why like China isn't going to be relevant or blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, they're sucking the copium.
The one thing I will say about like extreme right wingers that are anti-China is that they understand that China is a competitive threat to America.
Yeah.
Like whether or not it's a competition to something that meant to be upheld, they still respect China a lot more than liberals do.
Yeah.
When it comes to like the future outlook of America, and whether or not, so I mean, I'm going to say we because I'm Canadian and I live in Korea, so basically America's, you know, whatever. But when I say whether or not we like or dislike China, I think is like almost irrelevant now. And I think a lot of leftists on Twitter are too caught up in their feels as to whether or not people like or dislike China. I don't think that's important. I think recognizing that China is going to surpass American industry in key ways, I think whether or not that comes from a place of disdain or respect or anything is not necessarily the more important than recognizing that it exists. And this is why, like, I almost, so this whole like TikTok thing, I remember coming up with this idea through these TikTok trials. And one thing I'll say about Cotton and like all these like crazy Republicans that are against TikTok are like, they were saying things like, well, China limits access to social media. Why are we fighting for unbridled access to social media? And I think that's like this mistake a lot of liberals and a lot of even pro-China, like quote unquote communists on Twitter are making. I think like I've been addicted to TikTok for like the past year and a half. I don't think this thing is good. Yeah. And, like, I really don't. Yeah. There is a hypocrisy for disproportionately targeting TikTok versus like Instagram, which I think is just like equally harmful or whatever. But are the sort of right wingers that are like sort of heeding caution towards social media, are they like actually like wrong about this stuff? I would say like the CPC actually agrees with them on a lot of this stuff. I don't think our children should be exposed to this sort of fast food type of social media.
Just to your point, right, before this leaves my head, because you triggered this thought in me, was like, do you remember like a while ago Alex Jones, the kooky right winger Alex Jones, who everyone knows, he went on this like rant about how Chinese people are like, they have two modes. They can be really nice and pleasant, but if you get into a fight, they go into killbot mode, and they suddenly like all emotion vanishes, and they become utterly devoted to the task of killing you, and they are utterly, you know, they simply like all human consciousness evaporates. And he's sitting there literally like with a tinfoil hat going like, and then the lights go out in their eyes, and they just, you know, and it is so racist. But on the other hand, I was like, yeah, hell with it. You know, like, it's so racist. But on the other hand, there's this weird level of, like, I, as a Chinese person, clearly recognize that he's racist in that sense. But it doesn't piss me off nearly as much as people who say, like, I love the Chinese people, but I hate the government and what they have to go through under the awful CCP.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, no, just call them killbots. Just call
them. This is what I'm talking about.
And just say, like, we need to be afraid of
them. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
What's that?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. What you're saying is exactly what I'm talking about, basically. And it's why it's like, and I think you and I are probably at a certain class level where we can kind of look sort of, I mean, racism, let's be honest, like, to people like you and I, Teen, I'm not sure what John's situation. John and Carl aren't in, like, but the racism affects us less than sort of like a working class immigrant. Yeah. Like, it doesn't bother me as much because it doesn't really like affect my, like, you know what I mean? Like,
half the time, like 90% of the
racists that say something bad about me are on a class below me anyway. So I'm looking at this stuff and I'm like, yeah, and it's fair because I just look at the reactions that a lot of like pro-China people have on Twitter about sort of like, it's just, I call them Tang Hulu nationalists, where they got, there was a bunch of Chinese people that got super upset that someone like misidentified Tang Hulu as Korean. Like,
yeah,
this happened,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah,
6 months ago. And I'm starting to think like these people aren't necessarily latching onto China because of like,
absolutely. No, it's residual. I think it's like a residual sort of like thing that happens with like diaspora immigrants, where they think they're railing against the system of oppression or whatever. But what they're really doing is expressing an anger over being rejected or looked down upon.
Yes, that's 100% what I see. And that's why
Here's an example. I remember at the outset of what's going on in Gaza, I was in a space with like these pretty like militant Arab dudes, like pretty militant, and they were discussing basically like straight up war strategy, right? And this like Canadian guy comes in and he started saying like, Well, first, I think we got to admit the complicity of the West and the, you know, the settler colonial this and that. And the guys were like, dude, we don't give a fuck about what we think.
Our kids are dying.
It doesn't matter to us. Like, we are talking about, like, tactical fucking, like, strategy here. Like, we're debating, like, how to wage a war in our own defense. And you're sitting here guilt-tripping yourself because you feel complicit. And we don't have time for that. And not, and then they got into an argument. And the Canadian guy started fucking getting mad at them.
Yeah, but this is what, and this is what I'm talking about. So we have these, we like, diaspora people sort of speaking over people that are actually, like, living in these situations. Not only living in the situations, because I don't really care about lived experiences of them, but a lot of people are sort of Asia-facing, let's say, right? And they center their research and their reading around Asian geopolitics more than they do Western geopolitics. But we still have a lot of these sort of, like I said, they're like butthurt. They're like butthurt Asian Americans or something. They just just latching onto China's rise because they're like, oh wow, China's powerful now. When in fact, I think the healthiest thing, and actually Kim Il-sung said this a long time ago, he said when someone posed him the question about whether or not the diaspora should repatriate to like to join in the armed struggle against the South or whatever, he said, no, you should focus on revolution in the communities you live in, right? People should care. And so there's, I don't know. And that's one thing I respect about you, team, that I don't see in a lot of other diaspora is like people actively are cheering for the downfall of America while benefiting off like the prosperity, because half these guys that are pro-China, pro-CPC would still are recognize that, you know, the wages there are lower than America. You know what I mean? Despite what the CPC has done to do all these amazing things, the standard of living there at their income level is still going to be like probably a little bit different. They're not going to enjoy life there as much as they're going to enjoy in America. And they refuse to admit that. So to me that, and I know I sound like a hypocrite because I kind of left Canada and like moved to Korea or whatever, but it's almost like, cause I used to be like this. So half of this is self-criticism is like, I don't respect opinions like that. I think, you know, if you're living in America and benefiting off America's prosperity, there needs to be, even if you're, you know, even if you nationally identify as Chinese more than American, let's say, there should still be a certain level of respect you have to wanting change within like the place that you live in. And that's one thing that I think is different than, this is why I don't really I mute most of the diaspora now because they're all just like, oh, I can't wait to move back to Asia. I can't, do you know what I mean? I can't.
They're lashing out because they're angry and I think honestly, they don't understand this, but they're angrier at the liberal culture in America because it's so fucking frustrating to deal with that because it pretends to love you and care about you and at the same time condescends and quote victimizes you, and they're not thinking straight about this, which is why I think I think that's why more racial minorities are moving towards Trump.
I think it's it's a poison pill.
We should do another space or podcast about this sometime, but. Should we move back to the election and
okay, you know, okay, I'll just go back on mute, or you can kick me off speaker, and I'll just
No. But that, I really appreciate that. That was really
dude, this is fascinating, guys. Come on, I want to listen to this.
Carl just like listening, watching America melt down from afar, and like enjoying all. I'll say one last thing
before we end this topic,
and I think. If we want to be embraced by liberals, and I think that's a lot of things that Asian Americans and the diaspora are longing for, it's a poison.
That's the direction of careerism. That's the direction towards professional advancement.
To be embraced by
To be fair, if you're a young guy, if you're a young guy or a young gal in America, I mean, you don't really have any other choice, right? The elite academy is like, I mean, just go to fucking Columbia, like we did, you know, I mean, there's a culture there. And that's the direction you got to go if you want to advance, and you've got to play nice to those people because they're not, you know, look, the Elite Academy, they're not our educators, at least from our perspective, as, you know, these striving new arrivals or recent, you know, relatively recent arrivals. They're not really our educators in our eyes. They're our gatekeepers. And so we're gonna dance for them.
I mean, this is why I think it's a poison pill. I think Asian Americans have kind of like largely been immune to the effects of like structural racism because we've had this sort of Juche type of quality to it. Like Asian immigrants kind of stick to themselves. They don't really care about this culture war that like minorities and white people are going under, liberals and Republicans. They literally, Asian Americans care. I mean, our parents' generation cared about one thing, and that was like education. That was the only thing that they cared about. And we actually largely, I think a lot of our upward mobility was because of the fact that we stuck together and sort of ignored these. But no, now,
but that was the source of a lot of this boba liberal bullshit. Was this focus on how important it was to go to fucking Stanford, and they didn't. But the parents didn't realize the kind of cultural and social hoops you got to jump through to get there, and to get through it, and then what happens to you on the other end?
Yeah. The key is the
which
key.
Is why I think there's so much of this global liberal bullshit. The higher up you go in the education and socioeconomic level, I think it's the poor immigrant communities actually that are more immune to this because they just living, they're just operating their business. They're just
exactly
working.
What
they're
I'm
just,
talking about.
Yeah,
and that's why I think that a lot of Asian Americans need to revisit the idea of like entrepreneurship and sort of like independent ways. I mean, like you and I are quite different. You definitely succeeded in the corporate world. I never, like, do you know what I mean? I kind of was all sole proprietor my whole life, and I think just my personality, I know I would never have been able to become successful the way you did. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's a certain type of I just don't have the type of
you get the lip love you.
You just, gotta hide. You gotta hide behind
your fucking.
You have to have an anonymous account. You gotta call yourself some fucking Latin phrase that nobody knows what the fuck it means.
I'm just not emotionally mature enough or intelligent enough to be able to, like, do you know what I mean? Like, navigate, and I just wouldn't do well in these spaces. And this is what I'm saying is, like, maybe Asian Americans need to start revisiting this idea of, like I said, entrepreneurship. You know, sort of providing services to our own communities, stuff like that. But right now, I just see us going down this path where we had all these good things about our community. Like you said, it's almost not better, but it's almost like if you're a poor immigrant, right, you don't have this bullshit to deal with. Like none of this shit affects them in any way, right? Like it.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I don't want to over romanticize their position because that, like, to be frank, that position comes largely from the bliss of ignorance, but they will push their kids into it given the chance.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so they're free of it just because they don't know anything about it, but they're very like keen to push their kid into it. And then the kid has
to fucking do it. How did you make it in the corporate world without becoming like
I picked some boring shit. I did some shit like securities law. They don't care what you think, and it's pretty conservative. I mean, like if you go down like the route I did, I mean, like I worked in an office where when Elliot Spitzer went down, like the entire office erupted in cheers, right? Like, I mean, I was, you know, in the financial world, like it's a lot less. I think this is a misconception. Like, I think the financial world is a lot less ideological. They just want to make money.
Oh, 100%.
You know, I think it's actually when we aspire to more like culturally esteemable things like media,
the
culture industries, man. Like, nobody respects a fucking, you know, some guy that works at a big bank these days. That's sad. That's like, so passe. You want to be working at a not just any startup, not like a startup that like does like hard technology shit. You want to be at like Netflix, you know, or you want to be like, you know, like that's the real striving. And I'm just too uncool for that stuff. I always knew I was too uncool for that stuff. But I think a lot of my peers were cool enough for that, and they strive for that. And they wanted to be culturally relevant and shit. And then, man, that way lies a lot of just hoop jumping and self-delusion and stuff, because they're all, I mean, it's just like a 20, like a 24/7 fucking audition, you know, like, so,
no, I just,
yeah. Okay. Anyway, but yeah, John,
no, so, we get back to you. What,
yeah. Yeah.
Your responses to this, now, and if anybody else wants to speak.
No, man, I'm fascinated by the Zeke change, man. I could like listen to you guys forever.
Carl, you could, yeah, he's like, he's having flashbacks to when he was in America, going like, man, that place was fucked up. He's
literally imagining himself, what would happen if he never left.
Yeah. He's gone away to the other side.
Yeah. It is. I mean, dude, like, it is. Like the experience of, I mean, I've always thought like going from like a Korean or Chinese cultural background to America is like one of the largest cultural gaps that you could imagine that people regularly encounter. Like there's a lot of us, but that's a huge gap to like cross, and like to watch the kind of contortions that some of us make to get across that is disturbing sometimes, you know what I mean? And I guess I'm just not flexible enough to do it. Like,
you're a little older too, I think. Maybe that's like, you know, like you and I are a little bit older, so I think a lot of this...
It's gotten worse, yeah.
It's definitely gotten way worse, like especially... My generation basically started, like millennials, I thought. I'm like the oldest millennial, and like I think like this was kind of like the beginning of the end, and like we're sort of... The thing is like... I'm not sure what...
You know what? I'll tell you a related personal thing. I mean, I think what helped me was just like a certain kind of like social blindness. Like I had a lot of friends and peers who cared about social acceptance and being cool. Like I'm just blind to it. Like I don't have that sense. Like I don't know what cool meant. So I didn't have that burden. I think a lot of my friends feel like they were burdened by the need to be socially accepted and not made fun of or whatever. And I just didn't understand like what the problem was. I don't know. I think a lot of, and the thing is, man, like among like the liberal elite culture, like everyone is being like that, right? It's not just Asian nerdy kids. It's like everyone is trying to be accepted and trying to be picked, you know, because it is entirely a system of it's audition. You're just constantly auditioning. And then you're fighting each other for these roles. And then there's like all this social cachet with getting that. And people are very brutal about it. And I think a level of blindness to that probably helps. You know, so that's why this is why, like, I think a lot more people are probably sympathetic to Trump, but they're just too ashamed to admit it. Whereas I just don't feel that shame. I'm like, why would you feel shit? And I don't know. I think a lot of that shit, I think a lot of the thing about Trump derangement syndrome has to do with the, this inability for people to confront the sort of shadow identity of themselves, which is like, dude, like white men in America don't have it good right now. You know, like,
no, they really don't. And,
you know, like, I'm not saying that to be like to ingratiate myself to like white guys. I'm just saying, like, I'm saying that almost like from the perspective of like to white liberals, like, stop acting like you're in any position to fucking tell me what to think. You guys have problems. You should mind your problems and stop acting like you're better than your MAGA cousin. You know?
And I actually, my sister's an academic. I find it, she's only a year younger than me, so we have a lot of, and we have very different political takes. She's very capitulated into like progressivism or whatever. And the thing is, she's a smart enough person where I can actually outline arguments of why, sort of like, I mean, I'm almost extreme. I consider a lot of forms of progressivism to be like very similar to like white supremacist ideologies, like the way, especially the way they try to tell Asian men and other men of color to like sort of get in line. And I tried to explain this to her. And the thing is, I think, and she's never outright admitted it, but I think the one thing is that she doesn't have the courage to, like, within her, she's built this like social network and this, these social groups around academia. And so politics are a big part of like her socialization. And I think she's afraid to confront the idea that, like, you know, there are some things worthy of being sympathetic to these like racist white people are, right? And I'll even explain to them, I'm like, you know what, at the end of the day, I will often defend people that might think I'm like, do you know what I mean? That might have extremely racist views against me, because at the end of the day, a lot of these people don't know better. And I almost think liberals have a less, like, especially like urban middle to upper class liberals around like the academic protest cage, they almost have less of an excuse to have, in my opinion, this form of racism was always more offensive to me than, like, I grew up with jocks and I grew up with like these like liberal gifted kids, and the way the liberal gifted kids were racist to me, like growing up, was always a lot more patronizing.
That's my experience. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I really prefer the other one.
Yeah. Because it's more pathological. It's more, it's like
more sick. And
because it's a delusional racism. They think that there's a presumption of responsibility towards you, which is a perverse form of feeling of ownership and entitlement. And that's why they get all weird and like,
it's more patronizing.
It's super patronizing.
They don't get it.
No. Yeah, they don't get it. And I think a lot of these white hicks or whatever. I mean,
I'd rather hang out with Alex Jones.
I would. I think Alex Jones is hilarious. He's fucking hilarious.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And you can hit back.
You can hit back. Exactly.
You know? And I feel like, but liberal culture is one of fear and anxiety. And if you hit back and you hit a sore spot, they fucking crumble and then they lose their shit. And then it's
something else.
Yeah. Oh, and then it gets nasty. You know what? You know what was a perfect example of this? Is when the polls came out and showed that Arab Americans are supporting Trump in higher numbers than Kamala, and all the white liberals came out and said, enjoy being deported, you know, or white liberal feminists would come out and say, you know what, this just doesn't make any fucking sense. How could you support a man who threatened to deport your ass? I think it's because you're sexist and you don't want to support a woman. That's really what it is. There is always in that attack from a liberal white, there's a cultural condescension there to say,
absolutely,
you're a sexist Arab, you beat your women.
So that
mask came off so fucking fast.
The mask comes off really, really fast. You are an authoritarian.
And then they get an Obama to come out and do it and start, was lecturing black men to say, I know the problem with you. You can't see a sister in office.
Question, right? Yeah. How the hell are we like 50-50 on this with a campaign like that of talking down to people, which failed, right? First, they roll out Obama, then they roll out.
What's more improbable? But what's more improbable, 50-50 down the line going into tomorrow, or that bullet barely grazing his? I mean, there's a lot of weird provenance shit going on. Am I wrong? I mean, that bullet, dude. You know, like, we're going to need a full explanation of that. The main reason I want Trump to win is because I want a full explanation of those proceedings.
Yeah, I want
to. I want to know what happened that day. Okay?
Yeah, we may hold that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So this is our thing.
Yeah.
And we should be wrapping up.
Yeah, we should wrap it up. But Bebop, that was thanks for your input, man. Really enjoyed talking to you finally.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was a good talk, actually. Yeah.
We'll continue it sometime.
Okay.
John, any final thoughts? No. Or
we'll let Carl speak.
Carl?
We've been saying too much on this side.
Yeah.
Carl?
Bueller?
I'm just enjoying listening to this conversation. That was great. That was
okay.
Nothing more
recorded, to it. So we'll put it out. I'll put it out.
Yeah,
all right.
We'll put it out.
Well, look, I'm rooting for Trump. I don't know who the hell's going to win, but I'm rooting for Trump. But I'm hedged, because if he loses, all that is going to happen. Like, yeah, this is a long-term story. This is not like tomorrow's not the fucking culmination of this. But I think someone's going to have to take the fucking fall for what's going to happen over the next 4 years economically. And I don't really see I don't really see there being any good news in the next 4 years. So,
well, one last point I wanted to ask you, team. Do you, because with Kamala's like capital gains sort of policies, do you see a short term? Like a lot of people in the financial spaces I'm in right now are saying that maybe not a long term difference, but people are saying the markets might be down for like the last quarter and the first quarter of next year. Because of Kamala's, well, people try to navigate Kamala's threatened new capital gains.
But have you heard that in DM. Ask me that in a DM. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I will. We'll end it there. All right.
Hey, thanks so much, everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, for joining us.
Yeah. All right. See y'all. We'll do another one sometime. Okay. Bye, Carl.
Bye, Carl.
Bye. We'll be right back.